You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Does it play out? Over a long period of time, there's going to be money distributed, but it will take a very long time to get Florida booming again. In fact, it'll take years. You've got all these people who are facing financial ruin. I don't think that's too strong a word. Mm-hmm. If you're flooded and you've got no flood insurance, what do? You've just lost the equity in your house for sure. And how do you rebuild? No bank will offer a loan on a property unless that property has flood insurance. And flood insurance is going to be extremely expensive and very hard to find. So, I think it brings Florida's boom to an end. That's what it is.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Yes.
That was Stuart Varney on Fox News. Stuart, wow, that's kind of a dismal proclamation there that the boom in Florida is over. I wonder if it is. I wonder what Ron DeSantis would say to that. Anyway, hi, I'm Frank Van Brie. I'm sitting in for Larry Connors today. I'll do my best. I don't do this every day, but I sure enjoy it when I get a chance to do it. So glad to have you here, and let's just plunge right in. So Stuart Varney says, take years, years to get this money to people. People are in financial ruin. If you didn't have flood insurance, you're in deep trouble. Well, let's take a peek at this. Here's some statistics. The last batch, as of yesterday, the insurance claims filed from Hurricane Ian damages are 110,795. So call it 111,000 for residents, 30,000, just a little under 30,000 for businesses. Guess what that totals? That totals over $1 billion already. Now, I just heard on the news feed as we were coming in, they believe the estimated damages for the state of Florida are going to be $47 billion in the state. Unbelievable. Just cutting a swath right across the center of Florida. So there's a lot of interesting things to discuss, but if you did not have flood insurance, and that was Stuart Varney's main point, if you didn't have flood insurance, you're in trouble. Well, guess what? About 1.3 million households that are in nine Florida counties did not have flood insurance. 1.3 million. That is going to be huge, huge to try to come to help those people. I mean, what do? As Varney said, you could be facing financial ruin. The equity in your house, gone. If you didn't have flood insurance, no bank is going to loan on your property. It's just a very, very tough situation. So here we've got Ron DeSantis kicking into gear. I have to say, I'm pretty darn proud of the way he's been operating. I've never had to do this myself, but my gosh, what a heck of an approach that he takes. He's already got Elon Musk to restore Wi-Fi. He's got churches like crazy pulling together, teams of volunteers. They're already talking about rebuilding homes. So, well, you've only got 1.3 million to go. I mean, it's a lot. He's got generators being delivered to all of the gas stations, and the list goes on and on. So Ron DeSantis is sitting at the helm. He's like the CEO of Florida. He is doing one heck of a job. On the other side, where a political thing could maybe start to show up, would be the feds. I mean, one logical question to ask is, what happens to these 1.3 million if they can't get the insurance? Well, what about FEMA? What about the feds? Well, FEMA does just basic cleanup. That's all they do, basic cleanup. And so you're not going to get your whole livelihood put back together. But might the feds try to do something like that? Well, they may. They may indeed. They could put lots of money into Florida. And I don't think that's a bad thing, actually. Shouldn't the federal government help out? Shouldn't they be a part? This is something bigger than any one state, any one calamity that someone can happen. They keep us safe, right, on the military front. Well, when natural disasters happen, this would be a federal government focused initiative. So let's let the feds do their part, get FEMA in there and working hard, and let's have DeSantis keep doing his part, managing that state and bringing it home. So, as Larry always says, let's get ready. No, he doesn't say that. But ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
I personally know at least three people who got sick from mold. It's not uncommon for homes, businesses to have a leak somewhere. And it doesn't take long for mold to start growing. Well, of course, I recommend Wellington Environmental. You don't want a company that's just going to clean up the water. Wellington has 34 years of experience. In fact, hospitals often have Wellington inspect and treat mold. Do what they do. Call 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Call Wellington for a mold inspection, air testing, professional remediation. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rated with the Better Business Bureau. Wellington Environmental. Your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I want to get lost in your rock and roll and drift away. Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I want to get lost in your rock and roll and drift away.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
They may look like candy, but each one of these fentanyl pills can be deadly. That is why a recent bust by the Pasadena Police Department is so significant. 328,000 of these fentanyl pills seized.
These pills were specifically designed, what they call rainbow pills, to look like candy. They are killing people.
Other fentanyl busts also happening. The Whittier Police Department grabbing thousands more of the pills. 8 pounds worth. What's shocking is that investigators say these seizures put just a small dent in a massive wave of fentanyl pouring into Southern California.
Last year alone, in 1 week period, we had 7 deaths as a result of fentanyl overdose here just in the city of Pasadena.
And now Halloween is fast approaching. With rainbow fentanyl pills all the rage, police are warning parents to check all the candy their kids bring home from trick-or-treating.
Man, is nothing safe. Trick or treating, somebody's going to put fentanyl in a little kid's bag? Are you kidding me? And making them rainbow colored. Isn't that interesting? Somebody's got a heck of a marketing team in Mexico with these cartels that are developing all this, getting all their stuff from China. All the natural resources are coming in from China, and they're amassing them in Mexico and then sending them over to us. But that just killed me. Halloween? You're going to put them in a Halloween trick-or-treat bag? Here you go. Let's think about this for a second. Why do you take fentanyl anyway? Why is there a big epidemic? Well, fentanyl, you know, that's the drug that killed Prince. I don't know if you knew that or not, but he overdosed on fentanyl. And why was Prince taking fentanyl? Because it sure as heck makes the aches and the pains go away. And he was one heck of a performer. I love that guy. And it's just a shame. It's just a shame that he had to go that way. But it's an opioid. It's prescribed by doctors so that you can feel better. And if you're not a patient of a doctor and you're just out for a joy ride, if you're a drug user, then what do you see in fentanyl?
The first time I had ever tried it, it makes you feel like you're wrapped in a really warm, fuzzy blanket. But then you start feeling like on the inside you're just all tingly and it's like warm. It's like kind of like euphoric, but you want to fall asleep at the same time. Within 2 minutes, I knew that I said exactly, like, that's my new drug.
Amazing. When I had kids, you know what that makes me think of when she says that? Do you know those banana strollers? You know, when you take your kids out and you pack them in with the blankets and everything, and they're looking up and, you know, they suck their thumb and you're pushing them along and they're all cuddly cozy in the banana stroller as mom and dad take them around the block or whatever. That's what makes me think. So, gosh, I mean, that sounds great. So I see the issue. I see the issue. Well, so does Governor Greg Abbott see the issue. And so recently, this is kind of interesting. 29 Texas counties declared that they are suffering from an invasion of fentanyl and have asked the governor to take necessary steps to secure the Texas border and stop the invasion of many, many things, but certainly these narco-terrorist cartels. So what does Abbott do? He decides that he is going to declare. He actually wrote a letter to the president and said, "Hey, the Sinaloa cartel and the Jalisco New Generation cartel, I would like to declare terrorist groups because that's what they do. They terrorize the kids and adults in our country." By virtue of what they do. So a terrorist thing, those two major cartels, he has laid it out. Now, what's interesting is will he be able to invoke Article 1, Section 10 of the United States Constitution, which would allow states to utilize military force in the event of an invasion or imminent threat of the same. So the question is fentanyl an invasion? Is it? I kind of think it is. And then Texas could do better in solidifying its position if it were to take the lead in establishing a regional interstate compact. In other words, get the nearby states and their response to these narco-terrorist threats to participate, share intelligence, and supply resources back and forth. What a good thing that would be. You know, this gets into the greater issue, though, of immigration. You know, what are we doing in the immigration front? You know, I just heard on the news today, 600,000 getaways. 600,000 folks came into this country to get away. Now, think about it. If you came into the country and you had your family or you were here to truly make a better life and that sort of thing, you'd be one of the people probably standing in line, getting processed and, you know, getting bused places or whatever. If you're trying to get away, not all, but most, I bet you, or a good portion, are up to no good. That's 600,000 this last year. Huh. Wonder what they're up to. In 2021, we had 1.5 million illegal crossings. This year already, over 2 million illegal crossings. One might say, well, we need to do this. We need to do this because, you know, our populations are declining. You know, you want to know what the U.S. fertility rate is? You want to know how many Americans are having kids and at what rate? The average rate in 2022 is 1.7 kids per female. 1.7. That is not replacement. It's not even near replacement. Actually, 3 is replacement because there are close to 3 because there's calamities and things that happen. So 1.7. So our population is going down and the Biden administration is making the determination. And you know what? I mean, I don't sit by the television and watch this stuff every day, but you'd almost have to be crazy to believe that that's not intended. It is intended to bring as many people into this country as you can. And then you've got a whole structure of flying them, busing them, and putting them in different places. Now, I know the governors. I'm aware of the governors doing the same thing. Hey, if you're going to do it, we'll do it too. Here, we'll move you to there. But what could be the greater purpose in this? Is it to repopulate since we aren't, to try to keep the tax base up? You know, one of the things is if you can bring in a lot of people, a whole bunch of people, and hold them here and keep them dependent, then you'll have a loyal constituency for generations. That was back from the LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson and the Great Society. You know, and then as the censuses come around, well, you get to count them. You get to count them. And think about that. If all of a sudden we've got more people, up, we get another senator. Up, we get another representative in the House. You know, there's all kinds of things. So are they being strategically placed in different parts of the country? But yet, look at the cost of this. The cost is a lot of lives. I haven't even begun talking about human trafficking. My Lord, when you think about that, what a terrible thing, what a painful thing for so many people to be trafficked in here. You come into this country, you think it's going to be great, and the next thing you know, you don't know anything. You're wide-eyed and bushy-tailed, and the next thing you know, you are a slave to sex, to whatever they want you to be. Unbelievable. This is bad. I just think, you know, as a guy just walking around, just hearing about it from time to time, this is bad stuff. Why in the world are we just letting everybody come in willy-nilly, even bad folks come in and do this? Think about this for a minute. Everybody wants to be here, right? America's like home of the free, land of the brave. You know what I mean. Land of the free, home of the brave, right? So people want to come. Well, let's just say your house. Say you have a house and it's a beautiful house and people like to come to your house. They want to come to your house and they want to kind of hang out. And it's beautiful. You know, got all the furniture, the beds are made, the dishes are done in the dishwasher. Everything's just great. And there's food out and all that sort of a thing. And what happens if all of a sudden your house gets overrun? Overrun. Same thing that's happening to our country in immigration. If it's not checked, your house gets overrun. People aren't taking care of it. They're dumping the cushions and leaving the couches a mess. They're getting popcorn and M&Ms in all the cracks and crevices of the sofas. You know, they're leaving their dirty dishes on all the tables. Nobody is doing the dishes. The dishwasher is even broken now because somebody was jumping on the door. Yeah, on and on and on. How long would it take before people really didn't want to come to your house? How long would that take? I don't think very long, you know? I mean, after a while, you just say, the heck with it. Well, that is indeed what can happen in our country if we aren't careful, especially with the volume of people that are coming in. Again, the greater good. Are we really, really? I know, bring us your tired and your poor and all that sort of a thing. That's powerful stuff, but I don't know. I don't know. Is it an unchecked border the way to go? I ask you. I wonder. I wish I could take phone calls because I would love to ask people what they think, you know, what their thoughts are on this. I also wonder if this is a Democratic strategy, the Democrat Party, if that is their focus, is to get as many people in here as possible. Then I wonder if it could backfire. I really do. I wonder if this could backfire on them because a lot of the immigrants that are from countries where people tend to be more religiously conservative. And they're all not on board with just, hey, let's go. Let's go crazy. Yeah, sure, whatever. No, they're not on board with that at all. They realize this government's focusing mostly on race issues, and they fled socialist countries. They fled communism. They're coming here for a reason because they're trying to get away from what it looks like our country might be going to. Isn't that incredible? Isn't that incredible? Who knows? Maybe we do need a bazillion immigrants in here so that it can save our country. Have you ever, when you're traveling, or even when you're not, have you ever taken an Uber ride? you're on an Uber, and usually, most times I'm in an Uber, I will end up with someone from a foreign country, and I'll say, well, hi, how you doing? How did you get here? Oh, I came because, you know, I love America, or I've always wanted to come to America. I had an opportunity. And so here they are. They're driving their Uber, and they're very happy. Not one of those people that I have ever spoken with, not a one, was for an open border. Now think about that. They're foreign people from all the countries that are coming here now illegally, and not a one of them was for an open border. That's telling. That is telling. Let's see what else we want to say about this. You know, here's another interesting thing that I noticed, just a little tidbit. The Republicans recently called for an investigation into unaccompanied minors. Again, if you start breaking down this whole immigration thing, you begin to see that there's all these factions. You know, there's bad guys. There's good families that are coming. There's people that want to work and work hard. That's wonderful. I get that. But the Democrats were very, very focused on unaccompanied minors. Well, there are many – I thought I had a number here. I'm not seeing it right now. There are a number of unaccompanied minors that are in this country right now. And so the Republicans, Kentucky Representative Tom Massey, said, hey, we want an investigation into these folks. We want to figure out how we get them back with their parent, or what are we going to do? And interestingly enough, the Democrats didn't take them up on it. They were not invested. They're only interested in investigating the safety of children when Trump was president. And remember that debacle. My Lord, every 5 seconds, this and that about Trump. Anyway, when we come back, I want to talk about going green in 2035.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Because you know I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, no trouble. I'm all about that bass, bass.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Do we want to go all electric by 2035? Is it practical to do it now?
Well, we can make this whole discussion easy with the two-letter word, no. There's no such thing, of course, as a zero-emissions vehicle. The real question is, where are the emissions associated with the electric car? Because what you do with an electric vehicle is you don't eliminate emissions, you export them somewhere else. You have to dig up about 500,000 pounds of materials to make a single 1,000-pound battery. It takes 100 to 300 barrels of oil to manufacture a battery that can hold one barrel of oil equivalent of energy. Just manufacturing the battery can have a carbon debt rate ranging from 10 tons to 40 tons of CO2. And the plans that are in place to increase the use of batteries will require an increase in production of minerals like lithium, cobalt, zinc. Demand for those minerals will increase between 400% and 4,000%. Isn't enough mining in the world to make enough batteries for that many people for their car?
My head hurts. My head hurts. My goodness. All right, so EV. It's all the rage, right? All the rage. You got to get an EV vehicle. We got to go green. Come on. And then you actually hear that was who was that? Hang on, I'll figure it out in a minute. But you hear that expert saying, Mark Mills. That was Mark Mills from the Manhattan Institute. He's a senior fellow there, actually. And he says, in a word, this is ridiculous. We can't do it. How in the world are we going to do it? Well, okay. All right. Maybe we can't do it with the existing infrastructure. All right. Fair. But can we get the existing infrastructure to a place where we can do it? Well, I took a bunch of notes here. Let me just kind of go through them and let's together figure out whether this is a fool's errand or if we should be really trying to all go EV. First, I just want to say one thing, and I know this to be true. Some EV is wonderful. Wouldn't it be great? And isn't it going to be great when I remember George W. Bush talked about hydrogen cars? Wouldn't that be great? I kind of would like a hydrogen car. Just a little bit of water dripping out of the tailpipe. Not a banana in the tailpipe. Just a little bit of water. You remember that movie? Anyway, the thing is this practical really to go green? All right. Well, or to everybody get an electric vehicle. Right now there are. How many would you think? How many electric vehicles would you think are in the U.S. right now? I'm looking at the producer on the other side of the glass. He says five million? One million. 1 million. Well, actually, that's great. You're 10 million off. It's 10 million. There are a heck of a lot of EV vehicles right now. And we do want cleaner air, so this is wonderful. But how many would we need if we were going to, by 2035, have everyone in an EV car? Everyone. How many would we need? Well, right now we know we've got about 340 million people in the country, and we're staying at that level because why? Because we're getting immigration. That's why. So the point is we're going to need 400 million people. We have 400 million people in the country, which means we're going to need 100 million vehicles. 100 million. And Mark Mills so aptly put, where are we going to get the resources to do this? Right now, just to create the batteries for what we've got, we're using just as much crude oil, fossil fuel stuff to make the battery. At what point does it stop? Do batteries start making batteries? I can't even quite get into the thing and figure out, well, how does this ultimately become the new standard, utopia? We're all on electric energy. I don't know. I really don't know. The harvesting of minerals alone, it takes 16 years to get up a plant. I looked this up. It takes 16 years. Do you know how many plants we're going to need all over the world, really? So what Mark Mills said is all we're doing when we do EVs is we're exporting the problem to other places. So if we need batteries, fine. We're going to have all these different countries start mining and doing all these things that we don't want to do here in America, right? No. I'm beginning to think it's good, but only to a point. And kudos to Elon Musk for what he does. I think that guy is amazing. I want a Tesla. Anyway, we'll be right back. I've got a great guest coming up. Don't go away.
Podcast of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
For some companies, loyalty is a lost word. You give a company your business, your years, but in the end, you're just a number. But at Ackerman Toyota, loyalty is appreciated. Thousands of customers personally know this. New Ackerman customers quickly see it. Loyalty defines Ackerman Toyota. For all customers and employees, Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. Ackerman Toyota for life. It's been a hard day. I've been working hard like a dog. It's been a hard day. I've been sleeping like a log. But when I get on with you, I find the things that you do make me feel alright. Oh, I work hard.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
All right, and we're back. Frank Van Bree in for Larry Connors. This is one of those moments in radio that you never want to have happen, where the guest is a little bit delayed. And so here I sit. I'm ready to ask some great questions. Let me tell you who the guest is going to – well, actually, before I tell you who the guest is going to be, let me finish up a point or two from the last segment on cars. You know, I think that people don't really know the how difficult it is to pull all these materials together to create these batteries, to create these cars. I've seen a graph where it showed on the axis how long it would take to have a regular, normal, fossil fuel car and what carbon footprint it puts versus a battery-charged car. Now, you've got to think about the cost to make it. Yes, with the battery, we're getting a lot less emissions. But what it costs to make it and put it on the ground was exactly the same. The delta goes out years and years before we even see or realize the cost benefit to the environment, if we ever in fact do. That's the tough thing about this. The key, I think, is to be honest about what it's really going to take to go to zero emissions. We really need to be honest, and we need to think long-term, not short-term tacking points. The government needs to be honest. They got to stop using this as a tactic to get everybody whipped up and garner votes because they're the green people. Everybody is green to some degree. Everybody wants the best. We don't want to destroy this world. So come on. Let's be honest. You know, I was talking. Let me see if I've got this. So I'm sitting here waiting for. Let's see. Where are we? Here we. Where are you, Ben? Here you go. Here's Ben. So I was I was talking to my friend Ben, and I said, "Hey, I'm going to go on, and I'm going to talk about electronic vehicles and all this stuff." And Ben says, "Oh, really? You really are?" Oh, he said, "You know what?" And now Ben, just so you know, teaches in a major metropolitan area. He teaches a shop, what we would call shop. I guess they call it industrial arts now. But he just had a major automotive company come in with its truck and its spokesman, and they were promoting the truck to his industrial arts class. And he said, here are some of the points. He said, we just all had to kind of look at each other and bite our lips. He said, this truck on a full charge claims to go 400 miles. 400 miles, that's great. On a full charge, that's perfect. And then he said, well, now, okay, but if you, just so you know, if you turn on the air conditioner or use the heater in the cab, the battery does get charged on, you know, pulls power on that. And he says, so what happens then? And the guy says, well, maybe you'll get 300 miles. Okay. So if you turn on the heater, the AC in your truck, you don't get 400 miles like it's advertised. You get 300 miles. And then they go on and they say, this is a truck, and what happens when you put a bunch of stuff in the back of it? What's its hauling capacity? Well, it's 10,000 pounds. But once you put something on the back of your car to haul it, guess what happens? You just reduced to near 100 miles. 100 miles between charges. 100 miles max. In the real world, that means you have to pull over and charge your truck every 100 miles when you're pulling something. Now, come on, that's—I don't know. Again, I don't sit and think about this all day long, but I am a little bit taken aback by all this. Basically, this truck—this is what Ben says here. He says this truck can't do truck things. This is terrible. I'm not going to get this truck. It can't do truck things. Now, maybe a car is better, but I don't know. It just happened in his industrial arts class, and I thought I'd share that with you. So, okay, cutting the carbon footprint is a fallacy. Oh, wait, there was one other little tidbit that I wanted to share. Hang on here. I've got notes everywhere. Where is it? At any rate, it's – once we get everybody up and running, and we're using all the EV cars and all this sort of a thing to some degree, do you know how much it's going to cut into big oil and crude? About 10%. That's right, about 10%, because of all the other things that need to go in to creating an EV infrastructure. So big oil, rest easy. Rest easy. All right. Let's see now. Let's get, I guess my Mr. Producer, is my guest coming? No, you're shaking your head no. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Let's see. What should I do? I should start doing monologues from when I used to act or something. Yeah? Oh, you think? Okay, good. How now, brown cow? All right, let's see here. Well, here's who we were going to have, and maybe we'll get him. Hey, could we maybe try to get him in the next hour, and maybe I can – I don't know if that'll work. Oh, we don't – oh, okay, okay. All right, no, he's gone for the day. Okay. All right. Let's talk about him a little bit, because I've got some things to go over here, and I can kind of try to talk a little bit intelligently about some of this stuff. He was an industry analyst from the Coalition of a Prosperous America. He was with the Wall Street Journal, and he was a senior contributor to Forbes, covering China. And recently, so this is now what I'm going to talk about is energy coming from China. Let's go talk specifically about solar and solar panels. If you have ever tried to get solar, you will find that it is rather expensive. However, some states are making it not so expensive because they will give you plenty of money from the state coffers. Sometimes the utility has, I want to keep saying kickbacks, but they have incentives for you to do it. So you can get the state government. Illinois, for example, is this way, I know. And he basically you can make solar cost efficient. You may still have to take a loan, but what you're doing is you're locking your price in. You are locking in a price for good. And of course, with energy going crazy, wait till in the next hour, we're going to talk about Putin and what's going on with the Nord Stream pipeline and how that's driving energy costs through the roof. Well, hopefully, if you got solar, you are locked in. You're locked in. The question is, how fast can you get it? How fast can you get it? Well, it's going to take you 60 to 90 days from the time you sign on the line that I want solar. After you've gone through everything you've got to go through so you can fully understand the nature of solar, it's going to take you 60 to 90 days, and then sometimes it's even longer than that. How come? How come? Well, because China admits, I don't know why they admitted it. Well, maybe I do. China has admitted that a lot of their solar companies have been hoarding solar, not shipping panels, because they wanted to get Biden to remove the tariffs that were on solar panels. And so they held them. They literally held them. And why is that a big deal? You go, a few Chinese companies, who cares? Well, eight of the top 10 solar manufacturers in the world are Chinese. So they are hoarding solar panels, but then why did they admit it? That's an interesting question. Why did they admit it? And that's one of the key questions that I wanted to ask our guest, but I'll have to save him for another time, I guess, maybe next year when I'm doing this show. China has admitted to hoarding materials, which puts us in a very tough situation with solar panels and getting them to our businesses and to our homes. But when you do get them, and I know this for a fact, I'm the oldest of 10 kids, and many of my brothers and sisters have solar. I do not, because I can't have it in my neighborhood. However, they find it incredibly cost-effective. It works very well. One of them has a battery. Oh, there's that battery again. Ooh, there's another thing, manufacturing more batteries. But they said for what it's worth, solar is a good way to go. So maybe we'll get that guest on next time. I had so many good questions I was going to ask him, and he was indisposed. So we'll come back for the last segment, and I'll see you on the flip side.
Here's exciting news for Cafe Napoli. Soon there will be Napoli C. unique, exquisite, the finest, freshest seafood, lobster, crab, the best caviar. Napoli Sea will be next door to Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles. So it's going to be easy to satisfy your seafood craving or the finest Italian food. Napoli Sea, coming soon, joining Cafe Napoli St. Charles, Town and Country, and Clayton.
You should have closed your windows and got another dog. You should have chained up all the doors and switched up all the locks. And how many times have I prayed?
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
All right, here we are. We're back. Last segment. Then we've got another hour. Let me just make a final point, and then I'll tease the next hour here for you, because I think you'll like some of the things that we're going to do. And we already, you know how you go, oh my gosh, this guest was unavailable. We've already secured and made sure that the guest for next hour is coming. So no worries there. But, just to finish up here on this, solar and that sort of thing, think about this for a minute. There's some really cool things about the sun, about using our natural resources. I love it. I love it if we could do this. So I'm with every single climate person and green person and everything for the intent. The question is, can it really work? And are you using it for power? Are you using it to lord over people, to virtue signal, to hold people hostage and hold court? That's where I have trouble. And you know you're doing it if you're doing it. Listen to this. I found this little tidbit over the break. For 1 hour, in 1 hour, the sun sends... How many quintillion joules, Mr. Producer, do you think the sun sends in 1 hour? Five. He thinks five quintillion? Wrong. You're way under all the time. It's 430 quintillion. That's 430 with 18 zeros after it. So the sun hits the earth. Think about that. 430 quintillion in 1 hour. Now, do you think that's enough, though? Think about this. Is that enough for us to really, if everybody went solar? Same problem with all the minerals and everything and the mining. And can we really, really get the infrastructure for that to work? Is there really enough? Well, yes, because humans only use 410 quintillion joules. So 430 quintillion joules in an hour, and we only use 410 quintillion joules, leaving 20, right? One difference. We use 410 quintillion joules in 1 year. In 1 year. Can you believe? 1 year. And the sun gives us more than that in 1 hour. Can you imagine if we could harness that? I love that. Kudos to people like Elon Musk going for it and stuff. But I don't sense that he's ridiculous. I think he knows how to fit within the construct of how economies work and how people can keep jobs and people can move, and maintain their freedom and not be under the thumb of some green giant government. Anyway, I just thought I would I'd share that with you. It certainly is possible if we're smart enough to figure it out. Okay, what are we going to do in the next hour? So let's just recap. We talked about Florida trying to recover, and I think DeSantis is doing. Every time I'm on break, I hear new things, and he is doing wonderful stuff. He is a true leader. I am impressed. He could be running a Fortune 100 company. And we know that the government will come through. I've heard a lot of FEMA people and a lot of people from all the different agencies talking about how quickly they want to try to get money to people and help. What an awesome thing. Let's have federal and the private sector working together. That's the way it should be. And the feds have every right to be there, and nobody should be saying anything otherwise. Then we talked about fentanyl and its unfettered and unfettered immigration, and how fentanyl just is running rampant, and so is sex trafficking. We didn't cover that, but that's, God, that's terrible. I can't imagine. And yet we continue to allow it. Why? Then we were talking about going green by 2035, and we heard the experts say, no, don't go green. You won't be able to. There's no infrastructure. It's unrealistic. Make a bunch of people feel bad. Then we tried to talk about China hoarding solar panels so that they could get the Biden to remove the tariffs. By the way, it worked. It did work. He removed the tariffs. And then all of a sudden, the flood of solar panels comes in. Now they're all just sitting in warehouses. I know, because part of my job is to find warehouses for solar panels to sit in. You didn't know that, did you? And now we're going to go into the next hour, and we're going to talk a little bit about, Kamala Harris has been talking about equity, as we should handle the situation with, in Florida. And then we're going to talk about, Russia and the Nord Stream pipeline and its threat to the U.S. Is there really a threat to the U.S.? I mean, I know a bunch of Europeans aren't getting proper power and, proper crude, but why would that be a threat to the U.S.? Then I want to jump a little bit into inflation and how it hurts families, and I've got some real live examples. And then we're going to have a guest, and this guest is going to be fascinating. It's about parents' rights. I'm just going to leave it at that, parents' rights. And then I'm going to wax poetic at the end for the last little segment, same segment as I'm on right now. I'll wax poetic on that. So we will see you at the top of the hour. I hope you come back and ready on the right.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.